Welcome to Walk the Talk, a private podcast production with me, Dave Thomas. Thank you for downloading this edition of the programme. I do hope you enjoy it. In this episode, we focus on the work Devon and Cornwall Police are doing in addressing the well-being of their staff in conjunction with Dorset Police through their Wellbeing Alliance. They have set up a peer support group and introduced practical solutions to act as icebreakers to stimulate the mental health discussion. Police Sergeant Reggie Butler is now part of that team, and as you will learn, he is now helping others as a result of his own very personal experiences. So I'm delighted to be joined by Sergeant Reggie Butler of the Devon and Cornwall Police. Reggie, just tell me a little bit about yourself and how a street-hardened cop got into the world of well-being.
My name's Reggie. I have been a copper since 1995, 22 years or thereabouts now. All my service has been frontline. I started off response policing, done my probation in Torbay, then went down to Cornwall, Newquay, and the joys and funs of Run to the Sun and everything else we had there in the summer fun. After a few years, I went into neighbourhood policing, done that for a couple of years, also done some plainclothes proactive units, so always was on the operational end of policing. Got my promotion, went for a sergeant's, got that, went into custody, then went back on the front line. But all the way through my career early on, I had an incident where I tried to kill myself, basically. I'd had a breakdown, personal issues, job issues, and that had been buried because at the time we didn't talk about it. We're big, rough, tough cops, and if you signed off with stress, that was always seen as a sign as a weakness or someone swinging the lid. So we didn't talk about it, I buried it and didn't deal with it. And then a few years later, when I was a sergeant, I had issues with a line manager and some bullying stuff which went on then. And that really sort of, again, with personal issues coming up, pushed me down to the edge. And this time, Devon and Cornwall Police had the starts of the mental wellbeing network coming into play and peer support network. I got involved with that and found out more about mental health and looking after yourself. And that gave me a real passion. I realised that whilst Devon and Cornwall were making inroads and were developing this, and we were starting to talk about mental health, that actually there was a big problem out there and there was a lot more we could do. So we've become passionate about health, fitness and wellness. We had the team already set up. There was Dave McKenzie Clark, who'd always been here. He was the force wellness manager. And we'd had it this theme running through the force for a long while. But it had now been expanded. We had a sergeant and a DC on the team. They'd now been moved on and vacancies come up, and a couple of people suggested I should go for the role. I looked at it and thought, yeah, there's a lot of work what could be done here. So I applied for the role and was successful in my interview. In November last year, I ended up getting the post, and here I am with Catherine, who also got the role of the DC at the same time. She's based in Exeter. I'm based in Truro, but between us, we cover the force. And we're just trying to really push it as far as possible. We're lucky now we've been joined by John Nixon as the team manager. He's from Dorset Police, so the alliance is now completely covered. And we are trying to do everything we can to support staff in wellness.
Good on you. And obviously the wellbeing agenda has exploded onto the scene across all the forces within the UK within the last year or so. Do you think we're seeing an increase in mental health associated problems, or are we just becoming more comfortable in discussing an already existing problem?
I think it's a combination of the two. Mental health is now not a stigma. There's still some stigma to it. There's still some staff who will see it that if they come forward and say, I've got an issue, that will be held against them in their career. Well, we've seen senior officers in this force and across the country, and we've even got royals now who are coming forward and going, I've got a mental health problem, or I've had a mental health problem. So the stigma is being stripped away. It's still there, but we're working on it. It's not as bad as it was. But I also think with austerity, the pressures being placed upon staff, and that's sworn and unsworn, that those pressures are there. We're seeing an increase of it, but people are also more prepared to talk about it. So yeah, there is an increase, but we are also being more prepared to be open about it and say, I've got a problem. It's the same as any physical health problem, mental health problem. It's just the same as a physical health problem. It's something which can be treated, can be dealt with, but it needs people to talk about it.
And I know just
prior to us talking, we were discussing about special constables and perhaps some of the incidents they go to see, and then obviously go home and have no support at all.
Yeah, I'm a volunteer Coast Guard myself, so I know what being a volunteer entails. And our specials, they do a tremendous job, and they come out, they work with us, and sometimes they'll be right alongside us with some of the most traumatic stuff going. They'll finish shift and they won't come back for a week or so, and we give them very little support and understanding about what they're going to go through and follow up and stuff like that. With regular officers, their sergeant, their team are going to notice a subtle difference in them. They're going to notice those things when something's affecting them. But with specials, we don't see them all the time. And actually, if they go home and they're suddenly suffering and they don't come in for a duty for weeks or so, nobody's going to notice apart from their family. And they may not have the information about where to get help and support. So we've now worked with our citizens in policing team in DNC. And we've got training which is going to be going in for the supervisors, and next year for all new special constables we have an input going in for the teams.
That's fantastic. Devon and Cornwall Police set up the wellbeing team in 2015. Tell me a little bit more about that and some of the great initiatives I know that you have implemented along the way.
Well, the best one is the peer support network. That was set up a couple of years back. And what we have is 60 officers or thereabouts members of staff who have all been through a lived experience of some mental health, that's either directly or indirectly. They've then volunteered themselves. They've done a two-day course with the Institute of Mental Health, and they're trained listeners. They're not counsellors. They're not experts in mental health, but they're trained listeners, and they're available for other staff to talk to. They've got biographies on our intranet site, so staff can look on there, find a peer supporter they want to talk to and make connections with them. And that gives staff an informal way of talking and having a critical friend there when they need it. But it's other initiatives as well. We've now got healthy weight scales. That's something we've looked at this year. We used it down in Cornwall with Cornwall Health Promotion. And there was such a good feedback there that the force decided, right, we'd buy two sets. So me and Catherine use them. We take them around to the different stations and we do it as a lifestyle drop-in session. People come along, they get weighed, and it's a body composition. Rather than just weight, it tells them their body fat, their muscle mass, their water. And as well as talking about that, that often leads on to conversations about mental health. And we've had several people come up to us while we're doing this and saying, look, I've got this problem. How do I deal with it? So it's a real good icebreaker. But it's also a competitive edge, because one of the things it gives is a metabolic age. So there's a real competitive edge. Who can be the youngest? And we have staff going around, and we thought at first it would be just a little bit discreet. People talking about their weight, we thought they'd be hiding it and hiding away. They're not. It's like a game of top trumps. We've had stations where everybody's going around comparing results. Who's got the lowest fat? Who's got this? Who's got that? And it's really provoked talking. It's ended up that people are actually, right, who can do the most weight loss? Because what we try and do is go back every 6 weeks, 8 weeks, so people can compare. So we're giving the people the advice, we're guiding them on sort of healthy lifestyle choices they can make. And we're seeing some real massive differences. People are losing weight, they're feeling better, they're sleeping better. So all of these things are coming along. So that's one initiative. And on the back of that, we do deliveries, we do workshops. So for departments, we can go in and we can do one and a half hours input on stress or mental health, stuff like that. We're doing that with all our initial student courses now. We're doing, well, we started off 1.5 hours. We're now up to about 3 hours per course.
Wow.
And what we have is we have colleagues within the force who are also qualified in specialist areas. So, for example, we've got Jules down at Plymouth and Daz at Liscard. They're qualified in diet and nutrition. Daz is currently doing his degree in it, so we utilise him to come along and he'll do presentations. He'll do an hour's delivery on diet and nutrition, explaining to people actually on shift work, this is how you should be eating. This is the sort of stuff you should be eating. So we're talking to people about their diet. We're talking to people about sleeping. We're talking about mental health, physical health. And this is really starting a little change within the force. It's like I always draw a simile to an oil tanker. We've been ploughing along. We're now changing the direction. The other things the force have done is health and wellbeing delivery groups. So strategically, we have a group sitting at chief level where we have heads of departments who will meet every quarter, and they will look at the strategy for health and wellbeing within the force. That then feeds down to the sub-delivery groups for the local policing area, the basic command units, local policing areas, who also have their own groups. And then they are then looking at the interventions, the actions, the delivery. So we work with those groups as well. We look at, right, what can be done locally? How can we help? And it's just different initiatives. Table Tennis England and the local sports partnerships have approached us and said, right, how can we work together? So we're looking at, okay, can we put table tennis tables in stations? We're currently waiting for the quote from Table Tennis England, but we could be looking at a table tennis table in every other station. And again, it comes back to getting people to A, be active, but also they're going to be talking to each other rather than on a meal break, people sitting around talking on their phone or looking on their phones and playing on social media. They can actually get up, move about and have a conversation and be a bit competitive. So it's breeding that sort of contact and that communication. We look at the five ways to wellbeing as an underlying theme. And the first one is connections, and that's helping people build those connections. But the third one is being active. So again, we're incorporating that into daily lifestyle. Health and wellbeing is day-to-day business. When managers are sitting down, it's got to be thought about. It's on these wellbeing boards. They're talking about wellbeing. How can we make life better for staff? We're not perfect. We're far from it. But we're getting there. We're making moves.
And it seems to me, certainly in Devon and Cornwall, that this push for wellbeing is certainly from the top down.
Definitely. We've got the support of Sean Sawyer, completely on board. He's done sporting activities. He's just cycled from Exeter down to Penzance on a charity fundraising with the rest of the chief officer group. That they are into activity, and they understand that actually healthy lifestyles, healthy bodies actually gives you a healthy workforce. It makes people resilient. We are facing all sorts of issues. We're short of staff. Leave is hard to come by. Workloads are high. So we need to prepare our staff. We need to give them all the tools possible and give them the information and, if possible, all these sort of opportunities. For example, gyms. Health and fitness is really important. So the force has supported that by having, I think we're up to about 34 gyms across
the world. I think you started off with six, didn't you, originally? I think the figure was bounded about.
Yeah, it was six originally. We had the one at Middlemore and a couple of others dotted across the force. They were self-funding. The one at HQ would be funded by the force, but the local ones, yeah, the force would give them the space, but they had to provide their own equipment, their own insurance. That's now turned around. The force are now supporting them with maintenance, insurance, and making sure the equipment's there. We can only afford up to about 35. We can't do it for every station, but 35 is a massive hit. And actually, if you're a Force Sports Association member, you have got access to what's a really well-equipped gym 24/7, and you can go anywhere in the force and use those gyms. Yeah. So that's a sort of real good demonstration of how the force is supporting health and well-being.
Now, we also had a chat back in May about hydration, and you had quite a novel little idea of putting colour charts in all the toilets.
Yeah, it's a simple idea. It's not a perfect science, but urine colour is quite a good indication of how hydrated you are. The clearer you are, the better it is. The darker the urine, the more dehydrated you are. Now, a 2% dehydration drop straight away starts impairing your cognitive ability, your decision making function, stuff like that. But if you're looking at staff who are running around heavy workloads and everything else, and they're forgetting to drink, or they're not drinking enough, all of a sudden their decision making process is now becoming impaired. Well, in a job like ours, it's really important that we're on our A game and making good decisions. So we've put water coolers back in all the stations. There's chilled filtered water available at every station. We've also gone and bought out 2,000 water bottles, which we handed out. We'll probably get some more in, but again, it's just for staff as an idea. Here you go, have a water bottle, fill it up, take it around and constantly sip your water. Keep yourself hydrated, because actually if you're hitting a 4% dehydration drop, that's a 40% drop in your maximum workability. these little things are massive. So actually, little things people can do, the force can do, just by keeping people hydrated. So we sent the charts out to all the stations. They've gone up in the toilet, so when people go in there, they can see, actually, how hydrated am I?
You're not getting anybody comparing the urine yet.
No, we haven't been told about that yet.
It seems increasingly important that peer support is perhaps where the real well-being work is being done. What can be done to encourage that when perhaps goodwill and empathy is being stretched?
Goodwill and empathy being stretched, it is. But that generally tends to be targeted at the organisation. Peer support is about looking after each other. It's something we'd done years ago. We used to be a family in the police. We switched around and all of a sudden we become very much more business-like. We become very orientated on function rather than people. We're now starting to go back to actually we realising we need to look after our staff. Those are the core business. That's what we're here for. If we don't look after them, we break. In the Coast Guard, we have a hierarchy of rescue, and that works out as the first person to be looked after is the rescuer, the second one is the teammates, then it's the bystanders, finally it's the casualty. In the police, we need to be looking at something similar. We need to look after our staff first and our teammates. That's what peer support is. It's about looking after our teammates. It's about knowing, actually, Fred's off his A game. Is there something wrong? Can we go up and just ask something as simple as, are you okay? Is there anything I can do? Taking someone aside and doing that may be the thing what saves a life. We've, unfortunately, as things have shown recently, we've got a massive problem with more and more colleagues who are suicidal or who have taken their own life. We've seen it locally. I've had it personal experience in the last 12 months where a colleague has taken their own life, and it has a massive impact. And perhaps if we were looking after each other a little bit, if we had the courage to ask that question, are you okay, and actually listen to the answer, that's what peer support is. That's what we need to be doing.
And it's the decent thing to do, isn't it? Because we wouldn't treat the victims that we deal with every day the way we treat ourselves.
No, I had a colleague yesterday say to me when we were talking about some issues that if we're dealing with the public, mental health-wise, we're on our A game. We know what to do. We know what to say. We know where to get the support, we know how to look after them. Yet there seems to be a barrier when we're looking after our colleagues. We seem to be afraid of it, and perhaps it shows us our own fallibility. But if someone is struggling, give them the same support.
You also mentioned last time we spoke about fruit baskets being put in the police station. So tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, it started off with a trial down at Newquay Police Station. They got the funding from the local policing area commander to trial buying a fruit basket in three times a week. So it was Monday, Wednesday and Friday. Free fruit, little basket from a local supplier. They done it at cost price. So it was getting in touch with them and saying, look, what can you do for us? And it's easy peel stuff. It's easy to eat. So your bananas, your satsumas, your apples. It's stuff that people who are on the go can pick up a piece of fruit and actually take with them and eat quickly and easily. That went massively successful. And now that's being replicated across the force. And the thing is, with something like that, there is a cost. So there's two different models. One, if you can get the funding from it from your boss, great, go for it. And it might be just once or twice a week. The other one, which is a bit more sustainable, is similar to the old tuck shops in the station. It's an initial investment of a few quid, buying about a bag of fruit from a local supplier, putting it on the desk and charging 20p for a small piece, 40p for a large piece, and it's there and available for staff. And then it just needs someone keeping an eye on it, and then it just keeps being topped up. The other suggestion, which a couple of people have done now, is they've got smoothie makers and they've bought those in, kept them next to them. So again, little recipe cards, a few ideas. And if the fruit's starting to look a bit ropey, start making smoothies. And it's encouraging staff to do things like that. So actually, what can we do? We'll have a smoothie day and people coming in with different ideas, and it's keeping people eating healthy. And all of a sudden people are seeing that food can be exciting. And one of the hardest things, and I know from being an old response cop, is when you're out, what you're craving is just ready eat food. And actually, if you're going out, and your crib box is back at the station, and you're out on a cord, and you're running from job to job, you're going to go to McDonald's and grab the quickest thing at hand. Unfortunately, the nutrition value of McDonald's isn't that great. Tastes good, for half an hour, but then you want something else. And what we're trying to do is educate people to say, actually, have a refrigerated crib bag and have snacks in your bag which are healthy, which you know what's in there. Low sat fat, low sugar, but stuff which is going to sustain you. Homemade flapjacks, stuff like that. Stuff you can take out. So when you are stuck on that cordon at 2 a.m., you've got something you can snack into nice and easy. So, yeah, the fruit boxes are just part of that. And again, at 2 in the morning, you've got apples, oranges, stuff there you can grab rather than going to the tuck shop, which is usually laden with all the chalky things.
You also mentioned last time we spoke about a well-being hour once a week at the discretion of the local supervision.
Yes, an idea which was suggested and what's been incorporated into a few areas now. We're still looking at how it's implemented and it's going up through the force to try and get a firm decision on this. But certain areas that allow staff an hour a week for their personal well-being. It's down to line managers, it's down to operational commitments. It's not always easy to do. But actually, when you get the overlaps for response shift, for example, so your late shift have come on at 3 o'clock, your early shift are off at 4, if you've got that opportunity to allow a member of staff to have an hour downtime to go into the gym, to go down the beach, to do something like that, to look after themselves, that reaps huge benefits. So that's got initial support from local managers. We're now trying to take that up to the force and trying to get something firm in place. But the staff are really appreciative of that little bit of effort. It's a small token gesture and it's not a massive thing, but staff are seeing that actually we've got something back.
I suppose it's the equivalent of the early dart, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, we've always had that there. Staff have always been dedicated and given time to the job. They've always stayed on it later if needs be. They've come in early. We know the shift starts at 7 o'clock in the morning and the early shift are usually there 22:15, allowing the night shift to go off early. So actually it's paying back a little bit. It's not a lot of time. They've probably put that time in already, but we don't see it. So actually it's just a little bit of thing of going back and saying, here you go, have it back.
Finally, Reggie, an often overlooked aspect of well-being is that of the first line supervisors. They themselves have to address the well-being of their officers whilst being cognizant of their own health. As a supervisor yourself, what common pitfalls could you fall into, and how can the organisation help those frontline leaders?
The common pitfall is thinking you're too strong and having to think that I've got to be strong, I've got to be the strong one and stand in there. And when you are suffering, not asking for that help yourself. It's one of the things we look at our leaders. We look at our leaders to be infallible. We look at them to be strong. But sometimes being strong is that point of saying, actually, I'm struggling. And we're now starting to see a number of managers and leaders in this force who have turned around and said, actually, I've been through problems. We've got a very good superintendent who's gone through postnatal depression, and she will be open about that, and she'll offer to support other colleagues. And I think that's really important to see. But we also need to look up, and actually, if we see our supervisors struggling, let's not be afraid of doing exactly the same as we would for any other colleague and taking them on one side and going, are you okay? Is everything fine? And looking after them. It's not just supervisors looking down. We should be looking up. We need to be a family and looking after each other. So for supervisors, it is a case of if someone asks you, be cognizant that actually you may not be right.
Right, I think we're going over to the gym now to have a look at one of your wonderful weight machines.
So,
right, Paul's going to get on the scales now. So, Catherine, just explain to me what's going on here.
Okay, at the minute, Paul's gone on to the scales. So what I'm going to do is just put in his details into the machine, the standard male. Discreetly, Paul, how old are you, please?
55.
Thank you.
He doesn't look it, does he?
Not at all, not at all. I'm surprised that people who come to me look so young. Right, okay, and then we put in the height, and then the machine's just sending up the electrical pulses, so then we get the readings as well. So if you just stay there a minute for me, please.
And there's a printout, it's generated a printout now.
All the printouts generated, so that gives lots of different information that Reggie's going to go through with Paul, but I want to make sure that Paul's aware that today isn't just about physical health, but it's about mental health as well and the peer support service that we've got in force. If you want to step off, Paul,
sure.
You probably saw the leaflets over there that we've got, and
yes.
Just to make you aware, today's a kind of is about mental health as well as physical health.
Yes, good.
So we do have the peer support service within the force, which is staff and officers offering that support to their colleagues. So if you do need that, or colleagues need
sure.
that you're aware of, just to make you aware of that,
okay.
And that's what today's about, is just bringing that information to you.
Sorry.
Okay, it's on SharePoint, but the details you're given has also got my contact details on, so you can give me a shout anytime.
Great.
Okay, all right,
you.
But I'll hand you over to Reggie, and he will go through all those figures
Lovely.
With you.
Thanks very
all
much.
Right,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Have you done before?
I did do it a little while ago when the airwave people did their...
Right, this is a different one.
Sure,
so,
okay.
Go through this with you.
Yes.
So what we've got here is your weight is 80 kilograms.
Sure.
Of that, 19% is fat, which is 15.2 kilos. Now, if we look down here, the desirable range for a guy your height and age, 8 kilos to 18.2 kilos. There's a little indicator so you can see you're within the desirable range, near the top end, but no major dramas with that at all.
Okay.
Fat-free mass, everything in your body apart from fat, weighs 64.8 kilos. Of that, 61.6 is muscle. And again, we come down here to the desirable range, and it's bang in the middle of the desirable range for muscle. Your body is made up of 52.5% water. And the desirable range for guys is 50 to 65%. So a little bit low. Maybe keep yourself hydrated, have a bottle of water.
Sure.
Keep sipping that through work.
Yes.
This one is your base metabolic rate. If you were laid in bed for 24 hours, your body would require 1,860 calories to stay as it is. If you're active, if you're moving about, exercising, walking about, it will need more calories, but that's the base metabolic rate there. Your metabolic age, your body age, is 40, so you've measured not 15 years off your age.
Very good.
That's a nice one.
Yeah, I'm pleased with that, thank you.
Be happy with that.
Be happy, very happy.
Everybody's happy when they lose age. You can go home and tell the partner,
yeah,
now, look,
yeah,
you've
yeah.
got a younger man in it.
You'll be amazed.
Visceral fat is the fat which is stored around the lungs, the heart, the organs. It's the internal stuff and the stuff you can't see, and it places
yes.
a strain on them. You don't want it to be above 13, the lower the better.
Sure.
So 9 is single figures. It's good, it's no problems. Keep an eye on it. We'll be coming back in 6 to 8 weeks. Come and have it done again. Just keep an eye on it
yeah,
all
good.
The time. BMI we put on there as a guide, but it's a bit misleading because it doesn't take into account muscle mass, but it's on there anyway. So those were all the results on there. It's all explained in that leaflet.
Great.
And a free pen for you as well.
Lovely. Thanks very much.
All right.
Been good.
Was that a surprise to you, the results?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I do like to keep myself in good shape, both mentally and physically. So I'm pleased with that. I mean, it's nice to know I'm not only looking younger, but actually the figures speak for themselves. So all in all, yeah, I mean, it's useful to hear about the keeping hydrated, because I'm conscious about keeping the fluids on. Less coffee, less tea, perhaps more just water. So all in all, yeah, I'm very...
And what prompted you to come today?
Well, I'm quite conscious that once you've reached sometimes the 50 mark, to keep the healthy man check going, because other things can kick in. And as I think Reg quite rightly says, what you can see on the outside is one thing, but it's the inside that I'm more concerned about. So I think it's a case of just being aware of that, really.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So no major dramas, maybe knock it back a little bit. A couple of kilos off, I'll just stay.